The holidays are coming, and it can be a really difficult time trying to navigate all these holiday social events while maintaining your blood sugar balancing lifestyle, right? So I have a few tips for you to start out with. Number one, before you go to any holiday gathering, really think about upping your protein. So if you eat it, let's say it's a sort of a cocktail party, you're not going to be eating tons of food, then eat protein, lots of protein before you go, because this will lower your appetite. Next, if you are eating a dinner, make sure you focus on getting those non-starchy vegetables and eating your protein and fats first before you have any carbohydrates or any snacks. This includes things like chips, and pretzels, which are really high glycemic, unfortunately. They are made of refined carbohydrates, and so they're really going to spike your blood sugar. This also goes for alcohol. Choosing alcohol that doesn't have a lot of sugar in the mixers is really going to help. But if you want to choose to not indulge in alcohol, which is of course recommended for a blood sugar stabilizing healthy lifestyle, then my favorite option is Good Idea. Good Idea is a sparkling water that helps to lower the blood sugar response of meals. So it's amazing as something that you can bring to these holiday gatherings that are super socially appropriate, whether you're drinking alcohol or not, and they can help you to lower the blood sugar response from whatever you're eating, especially in cases where you can't control the menu. So you drink a third of a can of Good Idea before your meal, and then you drink the rest of it with the meal to get the blood sugar lowering benefits. It also has electrolytes for hydration, zinc for immunity, so it's packed with tons of goodness, and it doesn't have any yucky artificial flavors, it doesn't have any sweeteners or anything, it just has natural fruit essences, which give it a really delicious, mild flavor. So having lots of protein, eating your vegetables first if you can, not having lots of sugary things in your alcohol, and choosing Good Idea to bring with you as your drink of choice to your holiday gatherings are the best tips that I have for helping to keep your blood sugar stable this holiday season. So if you want to check out Good Idea, go to goodidea.us, use the code DANIHEALTH, DANIHEALTH, to get 10% off your order. I'm obsessed with all the flavors, but maybe the strawberry elderflower is sort of heading towards first in terms of my favorite flavor. They're all so good. There's wild raspberry and blackberry, and this one called sea berry that is absolutely delicious. They're so good. I hope that you like them, and please send me photos and tag me on Instagram if you bring your good ideas to these holiday functions. I'm so excited to see you taking control of your blood sugar and going against the curve and doing your own thing when it comes to prioritizing your health and wellness this holiday season. I'm Dani Hamilton, and you're listening to the Unlock the Sugar Shackles podcast. Our blood sugar affects how we feel at every second of the day and also has huge impacts on our long-term health. In this show, I'll help you understand more about your blood sugar and give you practical tips to help you gain more energy, have better sleep, crush cravings, have clear skin, happy moods, burn fat, and so much more. This show is about taking action and taking your health destiny into your own hands. Are you ready to feel better? Let's do it. Hey friends, welcome back to another episode of the Unlock the Sugar Shackles podcast. Thank you so much for joining me for another episode. If this is your first time, welcome and thanks for joining me. I know that there are so many options of amazing podcasts and things that you could be listening to. So it really means so much to me that you come back week after week or that you're joining me for the first time today in the midst of all this amazing content that's out there. So I wanted to share a really quick review that I got on iTunes because these reviews mean so much to me. I read every single one of them, and the reviews, even if you just click those 5 stars, it really helps iTunes to put the show in front of more people. So if you want to give back to the show, if you learn anything today, or if you've learned anything from the show and want to give back, that is the absolute best way you could do it. If you don't have iTunes or not listening on an iPhone, you can always screenshot the show, share it on social, or share it with friends and family. So here is a 5-star review we got from Pastry Vanessa. Hi, Dani. Love your podcast and intro and info. I have reactive hypoglycemia and prediabetes. My dad passed away from diabetes, and I have learned and applied so much of your valuable info. Thanks for sharing your tips, doing all the research, and helping people like me with reactive hypoglycemia. There is so much we need to know. Love your Instagram. Also bought some products and shared them and can't wait to take your blood sugar mastery program. Thank you, Vanessa. And guess what? I think you are in my blood sugar mastery program. So I'm so excited to be working with you. Blood Sugar Mastery just welcomed a new round of 33 amazing students, and we have already gone underway. We've started, we've had our welcome call, we've had our first coaching call, and this group is amazing. I feel so connected with them already. I absolutely love the changes that they're making. So willing to learn and take action and be open and share with each other and support each other. It is just already off to such a great start. This is why I love this program so, so, so much. And I also really admire all the people who signed up to do this during the holiday season, right? This is the most difficult time of the year to navigate. And a lot of us are just thinking, oh, I just need to get through the season. But this group of people are really saying, you know what, I'm not going to wait to the new year to get better. I'm going to take action now. And I'm going to get the support that I need and really lean into this community for the support I need to stay consistent, not perfect, but stay consistent during the holiday season. So super excited for Blood Sugar Mastery. The next round will be opening in January. So if you miss this round, it will be opening again in January. And I do these programs about 4 or 5 times a year, probably next year, 4 times a year. So just note that in case you want to join one of the next rounds. All right. So my guest today is Pauline Cox, and she was so lovely. She is from the UK, so has such a beautiful accent. If you don't know by now, I always wanted to be a Spice Girl, and I'm really, really obsessed with British accents. So yeah, that's my thing. But I loved Pauline not only for her accent, but she is such a kind person, so knowledgeable, and we got into such a great conversation. I felt like we could have talked for hours, and we talked about so many important topics that I think are so relevant to the modern day woman who is just struggling with perhaps estrogen dominance, insulin resistance, perimenopause, and just in general, hormonal imbalances, right? So in today's episode, we talk about Pauline's story, and she struggled with hormone balances, PCOS. She was struggling to conceive. She had severe anemia. She was moody, irritable, fatigued. Like, does any of that sound familiar to anyone? And she thought that she must be doing wrong. She started to learn about using food as medicine. So some of the other topics we talk about is the way sugar is disguised in healthy foods. This is really important because so many times we're thinking that we're eating healthy. I can't tell you how many people have said to me, like, I eat really healthy. But if you're not looking out for sugar, if you're not paying attention to blood sugar, it's really surprising how much your blood sugar can be dysregulated if you're not paying close attention, even if you're eating a really healthy diet, right? We talk about what is insulin resistance. I feel like we need to have this conversation over and over because so many people are so confused about this topic. It's pretty hard to conceptualize. And sometimes we just need a review, right? And we talk about why a rise in insulin is problematic for our physiology. We talk about how estrogen levels affect insulin and how they affect the brain, how ketones can be an alternative fuel source, why it's so important to balance our hormones in our 20s and 30s, how to help our body and hormones through perimenopause. When does perimenopause start? What is perimenopause? What is metabolic flexibility and what are the benefits of it? How time-restricted eating helps to optimize fat burning, how we can support our bodies through perimenopause, why building muscle is absolutely essential and so important for women's physique, hormones, and longevity, how to improve human growth hormone, which is an important hormone that helps us to build muscle, why estrogen dominant symptoms may show up in perimenopause, how stress management can help hormone balance and anxiety, why and how to stop snacking at night, and most of all, tips for sugar addiction, food addiction, mindset, and so much more. So this episode is jam-packed with such great information. You are going to love Pauline. All her information is in the show notes, and she has a great Facebook group, and she has a really good Instagram page, so make sure you go and follow her. And if you're in the UK, if you're in Bristol, you need to check out her store, Sew and Arrow. I am dying to go there, not only because I want to go to the UK, but also because this store is amazing. So she's going to talk about it in the episode. I hope you love this episode.
All right. Welcome, Pauline Cox, to the Unlock the Sugar Shackles podcast. I'm so happy you're here. It's fantastic to be here. Thank you, Danielle.
Yeah, I found your Instagram and I was like, oh my goodness, I need to get her on my show because you have such great information. I feel like we have a similar journey, health journey of how we started talking about hormones and insulin resistance. And you have some books, you have a book out, you have another one on the way. And I think that your message, the granularity that you start where you're starting to talk about female hormones is so needed because so little is known about our female hormones. We didn't come with a manual of like, hey, this is what's going to happen to your body, right? And so a lot of women are just confused. They think their body is going against them. And a lot of people, we know so many people like the two of us struggled with PCOS and are currently struggling. And there are answers and these types of things are reversible. You know, we can get rid of all these symptoms and be clinically non-diagnosable. And so I know that you're on that same journey as me where you want to provide people hope and these tools to learn their own body and so they can take control of their own health so they can get better. So why don't you start with your story and how you sort of got to where you are today?
Yeah, thank you, Danielle. Well, my story started quite a number of years ago now, about 10, 11 years ago, and I was working as a physiotherapist, working very hard, very long hours, and actually kind of prided myself on how healthy I thought I was being. I was following a vegetarian diet at the time, and I was eating a lot of whole grains and pasta and oats and things because I felt very, very tired. And I put it down to being busy, juggling motherhood with work and all of these different areas in my life where, you know, we excuse how we feel because of what we're doing in our day-to-day lives. But I felt exhausted. I had some major hormonal imbalances, which had been ongoing for a number of years. I had PCOS, which meant I really struggled to conceive my first child. I was having severe anemia, which was not helping my fatigue. Palpitations were regular, irritable, moody, just, you know, I had the whole deck of cards going on, and it was frustrating me so much because I felt like I should know the answers. My first degree was in anatomical science. My second degree was in physiotherapy. So I kind of felt like I should know what to do, but I didn't. And I really hit rock bottom. I got to the point where I was very emotional and fed up feeling the way I was feeling. And it was at that point that I thought I must be doing something wrong. I must be following the wrong diet because this can't be the way I'm supposed to be feeling in my 20s. This is just not right. And so I decided to start again. I scrapped everything and started looking at functional medicine. I looked at the work of Dr. Terry Wall, who I'd admired her work for a while, but I decided to look more in depth at her. She suffered from MS and had used food as medicine to really help to get herself healthy again. She'd gone from a recliner wheelchair to cycling, which as a physiotherapist really intrigued me. And so I kind of delved into the world of food as medicine. And it changed my life. It changed my career as well, because at that point I thought, wow, I started to realize as a physiotherapist, I was almost putting a plaster over a crevice when someone came to me. I needed to get much deeper back to their diet and lifestyle. So I retrained and went on and did a master's in nutrition and completely changed my own health as well. So it was quite the journey.
Yeah. So when you are talking about your own background as what we call here in the States, a physical therapist, I was a speech therapist. I worked in skilled nursing facilities. I worked with adults and I did work with kids. And a lot of times, you know, when I was working with adults in the skilled nursing facilities and hospitals, I was working alongside PTs, as we call them. So it was PT, OT, and speech. They're all together. And I also had that same realization. I thought I used to do intakes of all my clients' diagnoses, all their medications. And here I am giving people pureed food and, you know, saying, oh, you're unsafe to swallow, because in the nursing homes, that's a lot of what we did dysphagia therapy. And I'd be giving them like graham crackers in the middle of the day and thickened liquids and applesauce and pudding and all these patients who are diabetic. And then once I learned about what I was doing, I'm like, I can't do this anymore. Yeah. So I switched to working with kids. And then I saw all these kids, you know, a child on the autistic spectrum with hyperactivity comes in holding a Happy Meal bag. And I thought, oh my goodness, this is how it's manifesting, these nutritional deficiencies and the toxins and the eating not real food and the processed foods. It's like, that's how it was affecting us at the end of the lifespan. And then I saw it with kids and how a lot of this is impacting children. I'm not saying every single thing, but yeah, a lot of these cases, so much of what we know to be these chronic diseases, whether they're the beginning or the end of the lifespan or somewhere in the middle, these things are reversible with food as medicine. And yeah, so your story really resonates with me as someone who was also in a similar field. And I thought I could be helping people on such a deeper level. Like, therapy is needed. It's very important, but don't we want to sort of address the root? And then maybe someone else can give the therapy and the therapy will work even better, right? Or you won't need it altogether. So yeah, amazing, amazing journey, amazing story. So what do you see a lot of people, you were talking about PCOS, hormonal imbalances. Why do you think so many people are struggling with this? You mentioned you sort of accidentally, like by default, kind of got sick. And I feel like we could be trying hard, like we're trying. Yes. But we're getting sick. Why do you think this is happening?
Yeah, that's such a great question, Danielle, because you're right. I found myself, as I called it, accidentally unwell. And I truly believe it's the modern lifestyle, the modern diet and lifestyle we find ourselves in isn't congruent with our physiology. So, you know, we're not designed to be eating the way we eat, living the way we live, sleeping, and under the stress we're under. We have these core needs, these core health needs that if they're not ticked, they can be imbalanced for a little while, but if they're chronically imbalanced, that's when they really start to manifest as symptoms. And so, you know, diet's really important, but so too is sleep, so too is stress, so too is, you know, maybe exercise to that's appropriate for that individual, being outdoors, getting fresh air, socializing, emotional wellness. There are all these core areas that we sometimes fail to address when we're looking at just symptoms. And it was that approach to symptomology that really made me want to leave that previous profession and focus more on a much more holistic approach to health and well-being, and helping women to understand that when we get frustrated and start turning our anger towards ourselves, you're fighting your physiology. It's not that you're lazy or have no willpower or no motivation. When those deep set needs, that deep set physiology is out and it's not balanced, it's very, very difficult to fight that. But when our blood sugars are balanced, and when our hunger hormones are optimized and our satiety hormones are optimized, it becomes so much easier to live in a really happy place, in a really balanced place, in a place where you can make great choices and you feel motivated to do those things that you know you should be doing, because you feel good. Your body is starting to step back to a great place, and it almost takes making friends with yourself again first in order to make that journey.
Yeah, exactly what you said about how when everything's sort of, those hormones are all balanced, your blood sugar is balanced. I don't like to use the word right and wrong just for simplicity. I'm just going to say it now, but it's almost as if the right decision becomes the easy decision. The healthy decision becomes the one your body wants to make, and it doesn't require all that willpower and all that white knuckling and all that, I'm just suffering to make this decision. It doesn't feel like that. And that's literally the premise of my blood sugar mastery program. I talk about that fact that so many women, so many people are really trying to use willpower to get off of sugar and processed foods. And it's not without the best of intentions. And another thing I talk about in my program is something that you sort of alluded to earlier, and I call it the conscious standard American diet. So we've all heard of the standard American diet, or SAD, and it's just this, you guys even have it in the UK. It's not now, it's because of globalization. It's not just in the US, no. Right? We exported all our crappy food. So sorry, I don't take responsibility for that. But we all know what that diet is, right? It's like McDonald's and fast food and packaged food. And so many people, so many of, especially women, are like, well, I'm not going to eat that stuff. Like, I'm not going to go to McDonald's and have a Pepsi. I'm going to eat the healthy foods. So I'm going to do, salads with not a lot of dressing. I'm going to do oatmeal every morning, and I'm going to do lots of whole wheat breads and wraps and whole wheat pastas and low fat. And so we have these ideas from this old dietary dogma that we learn. And even though we're conscious about wanting to be healthy, those choices are still setting us up for failure, because those are not these ancestral foods. Those are sort of ploys by the food companies to like greenwash these foods, put a brown or green label on it and be like, look, this is healthy. So you get accidentally unwell when you're trying to get healthy. And I think that's the most frustrating thing for so many people.
And that was me, Danielle. I was eating rye breads and oats, and I was a vegetarian, and to be honest, I was disguising these foods that were essentially sugar as healthy, because I needed power balls. I needed the dates and the oats, and because I was so tired and craving sugar to get me energized all the time. And it was sending my insulin levels through the roof. And boy, did I feel it. Boy, did I see it on my body, my skin and my body shape and all these different signs that were telling me something's not right. But I didn't know. I didn't understand the signs at the time. And I certainly didn't know that those choices I was making were making me unwell. And I think that's really, as you said, it's that narrative that we get from all areas. This is a very confusing landscape out there, with media and online and influencers and people telling you this, that, and the other. And I think it's so important that we don't just take that message from the 28-year-old guy who's pumping iron in the gym, telling us we need our carbs at this time, that time, and the other time, that we look at our physiology as women and understand that we have this 28-day cycle, not a 24-hour cycle that men have. And we have different hormones. And whilst we have our similarities, we also have our great differences as men and women, but also as women. Some people tolerate certain foods better than others, but we all need to understand that our blood sugars and our insulin levels have a very big impact on our female physiology. Yes, men as well, but at the moment we're looking at female physiology. And as we enter our 40s, how that really starts to have, it really starts to highlight the symptoms that come with those shifts in our sex hormones.
Yeah, that's beautifully said. And it's so interesting that you have that sort of conscious standard American vegetarian type diet that you were doing. And I was on the paleo end of the spectrum. So I did paleo and I was like, this is so healthy. I'm eating smoothies and plantains and like fruit and nut bars and the dates and sweet potatoes and coconut sugar and maple sugar. And it's all paleo. So it's all healthy. So I thought I was being healthy. I didn't realize, once again, if we are burning sugar, if our blood sugars are not balanced, if we have insulin resistance, which we'll get into in just a second, we're going to be seeking out sugar in all its forms. So sugar can have this health halo on it. Oats breaks down in the body to become sugar. That's what starches are. They're long chains of sugar molecules. So if you chew it long enough in your mouth, you can do this with any starch like white rice or bread or oats. If you just chew it for like 3 minutes, it will start to taste sweet to you because The enzymes in your saliva are breaking apart those starch molecules into individual glucose molecules. So you are seeking it out in that way. I was seeking it out in the form of like plantains and fruits and smoothies and acai bowls and sugar. Like for me, I'm more of that sweet sugar craver, but I thought it was healthy because that's what the narrative is. The narrative is eat fruits and vegetables. Like they lump those together and just say, eat a lot of fruits and vegetables. I'm like, okay, check. I will have smoothies and acai bowls all day. And, and they don't, I didn't think there was a problem with that. And for me as well, it started, it was really underlying my PCOS and sugar imbalances. So let's jump into talking about insulin resistance. Can you tell us a little bit about what is insulin resistance? We hear a lot about it. We know tons of people have it. It's really hard to diagnose. Doctors aren't looking for it, but it's very, very, very prevalent.
It's
so can you-
very prevalent. And and you're right. There are a great, great deal of people who have it and have it. It's a spectrum, first of all. So insulin resistance comes from years of high sugar, consuming high carb diet, high sugar diet. It's also contributed to through stress and inflammation, but really we've become expert insulin resistant individuals through our diet. So when we're continuously consuming carbohydrates and sugars, our body, as you've mentioned, will break down carbs into sugar. So putting it simply, our blood sugars go up, our body needs to mop that sugar up and get it into the cells because high blood sugars are very damaging. So our body has a very small tolerance for sugar, and it will quickly get that sugar out of the blood to make sure that it doesn't damage the tissues around. So insulin is released from the pancreas in order to usher the blood sugars into the cells. And it's a very, very effective system. So we can either use glucose for fuel or we can use ketones for fuel when we're burning fat. Now, this system is fantastic. However, when we abuse the system and we continuously drive our blood sugars up every hour, 2 hours, 4 hours, eating carbs for breakfast, mid-morning snacks, paninis and baguettes and sandwiches at lunchtime, and then an afternoon snack of some chips and various other things, our blood sugars are rising continuously. So our pancreas is pumping up more insulin to usher more of that blood glucose out and into the cells. Now, over time, our cells become resistant to the demands of insulin to take that glucose in. And some of the first cells that become resistant are our fat cells, because, you know, our various cells throughout the body will take up this glucose to use for fuel or to store as fat. So our blood sugars, because insulin is now not being listened to by the cells are like, I'm not taking any more of this glucose in. The door to get the glucose into the cells has become really heavy. It's like it's this big heavy door. And so we need more insulin to get that glucose in. So the pancreas produces more insulin. So blood sugars are starting to rise, insulin levels then start to rise, and the cells demand, they need more insulin to get that same blood glucose in. So in effect, insulin resistance, as I mentioned, it's on a spectrum, but it's characterized by this rise in insulin. And it's the rise in insulin that becomes very problematic for our physiology. This increase in insulin is, firstly, it drives fat storage. So it really halts fat burning. It has an impact on our cardiovascular system. So when the cardiovascular system becomes insulin resistant, it becomes less flexible. So insulin, when it's in its normal range and it's working optimally, helps to dilate the blood vessels. So it's good for our blood pressure. But when the cardiovascular system becomes insulin resistant, it becomes firm and inflexible. So our blood pressure starts to go up. So we have all of these different organs and tissues that become affected by insulin resistance. The brain is another very, very important one, particularly, again, for us females, because estrogen is another, it's another helper to get glucose into the brain cells. So insulin helps get glucose into the neurons. Estrogen also helps to shift glucose into the blood, into the neurons. Now, as estrogen starts to decline with perimenopause, if we have insulin resistance in the brain, which, let's be honest, most of us do by the time we get to our 40s, then that drop in estrogen is really highlighted because we now have an even more under-fueled brain area. Our neurons become really hypometabolic. And so the symptoms of perimenopause really become heightened. Brain fog, memory issues in the hypothalamus and the hippocampus, they're affected. So our memory, our hunger becomes more prolonged and more intense. Our body temperature regulation is affected. So we get hot flushes, our mood, the amygdala, we become more fearsome, more anxious. So all these key areas of the brain that are kind of really starting to become insulin resistant become heightened as our estrogen drops. And it's like this barometer for health. That period, that perimenopausal period, really highlights issues with insulin resistance and blood sugar issues.
Wow. So the estrogen is a hormone of men have it as well, but it's really highlighted in females that increases our sensitivity to insulin. Is that accurate?
Yeah.
So estrogen increases insulin sensitivity.
Really, it helps our glucose tolerance. Mm-hmm. And so the brain loves estrogen because it makes mm-hmm. us feel great. It's one of those Goldilocks hormones. We don't want too much because it mm-hmm. makes us a bit crazy. We don't want too little because it has so many wonderful benefits, but it can make us feel really low and unmotivated and slightly depressed if it's too low. But in this really optimal amount, it helps our brain be focused and alert, and all those different neurons that are doing different functions within the brain are happy because estrogen is helping to shunt the glucose into the neurons as insulin does. So as insulin resistance kicks in and estrogen drops, we get this brain that becomes underfueled. Now, during perimenopause, there's a recalibration of the brain, and you know, it can shift over a few years to really adapt to that lower level of estrogen. But it's really this pathway that can drive us towards dementia and Alzheimer's when we have insulin resistance and low estrogen, and we're just getting this hypometabolic state, this underfueling of the neurons. However, if we're not relying upon the glucose pathway and having this insulin resistant state, if we're actually burning fat for fuel and we're optimizing ketones for fueling the brain, then it is a much easier transition through that period where we're not just relying on glucose and estrogen shunting glucose into the neurons. We're still getting this optimal fuel through ketones, which require no help from insulin or estrogen. Ketones are pushed into the neurons, whereas glucose needs to be transported across.
Wow. Yeah, that's super interesting and makes me really glad that I already do a cyclical ketogenic diet. And that's what I talk about with my clients as well, that, you know, being able to be fueled by fat is yes. so, so helpful for our hormones and for so many other things like our inflammation levels and things like that, because, you know, ketones are a much cleaner fuel source. So tell us, as it relates to insulin resistance, you were talking about how this is really showing up for perimenopause, which I was told starts at around age 35, and I just turned 36. And so I'm like, oh my goodness. Okay. So perimenopause is starting soon for me or now. So what do we need to do? Because it seems like, you know, the proverbial shit's going to start hitting the fan for me soon. Yeah. Right. And so what can women do in their 30s or 20s and 30s to sort of help ease this transition? Because it sounds like things get a little bit wonky perimenopause. So how can we help with that whole journey?
Yeah, that's a great question, because the reality is the more preparation we do in our 20s and 30s to balance our hormones, the easier the transition is. I mean, it's a very natural transition, Danielle. I know we portray perimenopause and menopause as this really challenging time, but that's because of the modern lifestyles and diet that we follow. And actually, if we really emotionally and physically prepare for that transition, our bodies are innately intelligent. They deal with it. You know, they're incredibly smart. So what we really want to be doing is optimizing our metabolic flexibility. And for sure in our 30s, you can do it in your 40s, but you want to try and get started as early as possible. So what does metabolic flexibility mean? We touched on it earlier. It essentially means that we can burn fat for fuel or we can burn glucose for fuel. If we eat a sweet potato, or if we have you know, something that's a little bit higher in carbs, our body sees that the blood glucose levels going up, it mops it up, the insulin does its job, and we get that nice gentle peak and back to normal again. If we're not eating and we go maybe 14, 16 hours without consuming any food, our body's like, hey, that's no issue. I have my reserves here. I'm accessing them and I'm burning that fat. And there are the ketones. That's our metabolic flexibility. We're dual fuel burners and we can access both pathways smoothly and easily and transition from one to the other. Now, the benefits of that are that we don't carry lots of excess weight, because when you're metabolically flexible, it means that your body will burn fat effectively. When you're insulin resistant, it means that those insulin levels are creeping up and it's blocking fat burning. And your body seems to be constantly hungry. You know, your brain is underfueled because you're not getting the glucose into the brain so effectively. So you tend to be tired. You can't focus and concentrate so well. So what do? We turn to sugar and caffeine and all these foods to try and give us that lift. We tend to gain weight more easily. Our hormones for sure get out of balance. I mean, it can really affect our estrogen and testosterone levels. And when we get into that testosterone heavy kind of picture where we're in that PCOS kind of situation, insulin has a negative impact on the conversion of testosterone to estrogen. So we start to get this increase in testosterone, which again is going to start driving our weight gain. It can have an impact on facial hair and skin and other areas. Insulin also has an impact on something called sex hormone binding globulin, which is something that binds to testosterone and keeps it from exerting its effects. And insulin means that there's less of this and therefore more free testosterone. So it has quite a detrimental impact on our fertility and our sex hormones, estrogen, testosterone, and progesterone. So really we want to be looking at how in our 30s we start to become this metabolically flexible picture. And that starts with becoming conscious of your carbs, what you're eating, the impact those carbs are having on your blood sugars, which you can either monitor through a continuous blood sugar monitor, or even if you're not going down that route, just how you're feeling with it. You know, does this make you feel really sleepy a few hours after you've eaten it? Do you feel satiated? Do you feel energized? Certain foods are always going to make you feel pretty good, like high protein eggs and meats and low carb vegetables. Cruciferous are excellent for women. So, you know, if you're eating some core foods and you're not having loads of grain and healthy sugars, then you know your blood sugars are going to be fairly good. But I love to really look at optimizing protein, vegetables, help like low carb veg, particularly cruciferous for women, and time restricted eating. And those are some pretty good ways of getting started. Time restricted eating particularly is incredibly helpful for really starting to optimize fat burning and insulin sensitivity and metabolic flexibility. And it doesn't cost anything extra. It doesn't take any real extra effort. It does take a little bit of planning and discipline at the beginning, but after a while it gets really, it becomes part of your lifestyle.
Yeah, beautifully said. And so those are the fantastic things that we can start doing in our 30s. That's a lot of what I teach as well, to become metabolically flexible. We don't want to just swing keto and only eat fats and never have a drop of glucose again and become metabolically inflexible the other way. We want to be able to cycle these foods, maybe with our monthly cycles eventually. Some people are very, you know, self-diagnosed sugar addicts, and that's not maybe a journey that they'll go on. But ideally, we want to have this beautiful flexibility where, you know, something goes late, we have to fast for blood work, and, you know, we there's no healthy food around, no big deal. I'll just fast through lunch and eat when I can. There's so much freedom in that. And that's what I didn't have when I had PCOS. And that's what I have now. And it feels amazing. Your mind's not always thinking about food. You listed so many of those sort of hidden symptoms that not a lot of us realize. And just, we think it's how we are. We think, you know, I was a person who needed to eat before I went out to eat. I carried granola bars with me wherever I went. And you have that freedom. That's not a personality trait. That's a sign of metabolic inflexibility. And so you did such a good job of explaining that. And so that's what we want to focus on if we can, if we're hearing this in our 20s and 30s. And then as we get into our 40s, as we start going into perimenopause, what can we expect and how can we best support our bodies through this?
Yeah. Again, it's a really interesting time, Danielle, when you sort of certain hormones start to shift, but they shift differently. So, you know, when we get to our sort of mid-30s onwards, growth hormone starts to decline. So growth hormone is really, really important for building muscle. It really helps with our metabolism. So we want to really optimize growth hormone from our mid-30s onwards, because building muscle is one of the key areas that helps to maintain our insulin sensitivity. And it's one of the main reasons that women have this slight disadvantage when it comes to weight gain and an increased prevalence of insulin resistance earlier than men. So we tend to lose muscle. Something called sarcopenia kicks in earlier with women because of this loss of growth hormone. And so from our sort of mid-30s onwards, we want to be thinking, okay, how do I maintain muscle mass? How do I optimize muscle mass? And that's through resistance training is really helpful. Time-restricted eating is really helpful again, because growth hormone spikes when we're fasting. So we get a big spike in growth hormone if we're, say, fasting from 6 p.m. through to maybe 8, 9, 10 o'clock the next day. Our growth hormone is going to peak, which is really, really helpful for building muscle. Minimizing stress. Cortisol has a negative impact on our muscle mass. So there are these kind of important things that we can do. And with men, they need to do about 40 minutes of resistance exercise to get the same benefits in growth hormone as we as women do by doing just 20 minutes of resistance exercise. So we have an advantage there. So just doing 20 minutes of resistance exercise is really key for not just bone health, but absolutely for muscle health and growth hormone too. Now, the other thing that starts to shift in our sort of mid-30s onwards is testosterone. Believe it or not, we have actually pretty high levels of testosterone naturally, far more than we do estrogen. But as testosterone starts to decline, it's a bit different with PCOS, but put that aside for a moment and let's think of someone who maybe has estrogen dominance and not the typical PCOS profile. Testosterone is very important for metabolism. It's really important for confidence. It's really important for self-esteem and that motivation. And as testosterone starts to decline, as we get to that late 30s, early 40s, it can impact our metabolism, but also how we're feeling, you know, our confidence. So we want that balance to be again maintained. And that's where men have that testosterone advantage. So they tend to burn more. They tend to have that metabolic advantage more so than women. But adopting a more low carb keto type diet, so having more ketones for fuel, does tend to keep our testosterone a little higher. So when men adopt a keto diet, they tend to do very, very well. And the women in their lives doing the same are like, well, why isn't this working for me? We do have to do it slightly differently. We don't necessarily just want to load on loads of fat, particularly if we have fat that we're looking to burn. But we do want to be optimizing our protein, having some healthy fats, but not comparing our journey to a man who has 10 times the level of testosterone that we do. So we have this shift in growth hormone. We have a shift in testosterone. Then we enter that phase where estrogen and progesterone start changing. Now, estrogen has a fairly erratic journey from early 40s to late 40s, early 50s. Progesterone has more of a predictable decline. So in that early phase of perimenopause, progesterone could start to decline, and estrogen can still be in quite high quite high levels. So we can start to get this very estrogen dominant type scenario. And it can almost be like a second puberty. So we can start to find our periods are getting shorter and heavier. We might get skin issues. We might become very irritable. We might become more anxious because progesterone levels are declining. We might start becoming quite tense physically and mentally. And so it's very important that we try and optimize our progesterone levels. And that is hugely impacted by emotional stress and other dietary pathways impact progesterone as well. And I would always say, ladies, if you're going to supplement something, then supplement magnesium, because it has a really big impact on our hormones, on our PMS, on anxiety, on so many things. My top supplements are for sure magnesium. I like magnesium glycinate or biglycinate. I also like an omega-3 fatty acid because it has a really positive impact on our inflammatory levels, and our inflammation really starts to creep up during perimenopause, which is heightened by loss of progesterone and estrogen, by increased insulin resistance. So again, I look to really try and balance out my omega-3s and omega-6s through diet, but also, you know, supplements can be helpful. A good fish oil, if you're not a vegetarian or pescatarian. Ahi flour is a very nice form of vegan. It's a vegan option. It's a plant-based option of getting intelligent fats in your diet. So EPA and DHA, you usually only get from animal-based, like fish oils, eggs. And ALA are the omega-3s found in plants, but there's one particular plant called ahi flower, and it has a really interesting fatty acid profile in that it has higher levels of something called SDA, which convert far more into EPA, the intelligent fats we need, four times more than something like flax or hemp. So it's a really nice plant-based option for those looking for something that's not fish oil-based, but plant-based. So those,
we don't have a lot of those people listening to the podcast, but I appreciate that you that you shared that. And it's important to know that ALA, just like you said, you know, we say, oh, we can get all these omega-3s from plant foods. It's like, well, that is, it's the weakest form of the omega-3, and it converts very poorly into these highly usable, necessary forms. I personally really like cod liver oil. Usually that's a safer extraction process. So you have to be really careful with the fish oils, like you said, because the extraction processes are no good. I really like the ones from Biotics Research. I also like Rosita brand cod liver oil. And the cod liver oil actually has vitamins A and D in it. And it's a natural form of these things. Yeah. So I think that's really important, because I've seen your posts saying, which I know to be true as well, but talking about vitamin D supplementation, a lot of people are low in that, but it can really deplete those magnesium stores. And we know that we need magnesium stores in order to even hold the vitamin D in place. So getting it from a natural source.
I think getting the two in, you know, magnesium, I think is, we're so low in magnesium anyway. I mean, people say, well, how do I know I'm low? I just assume you're low, because most people are, you
same. Know? Just take handfuls of it and you'll be fine.
And the really interesting thing is with magnesium is when people start taking it, they feel so much better. You know, they just sleep better. It has a very positive impact on our insulin sensitivity. So it supports insulin sensitivity. It's great for building progesterone. It's great for bowel movements because it helps to relax the bowel. There are so many things that magnesium helps with, and there are so many reasons why we're deficient. I've done entire podcasts just on why we're deficient in magnesium, but you know, it really has to do with our diet, our gut health, our inability to absorb it. We're aging. We have these medications that deplete us of magnesium. So there's a number of reasons. Inflammation depletes us of magnesium, insulin resistance,
sugar,
stress,
soils are depleted. Can definitely do a whole podcast
against this. So when we start to, you know, when we just start to address these things step by step, how am I eating? What am I eating? When am I eating? How am I sleeping? How are my stress levels? How can I support myself? Just one thing at a time, week by week. Okay, I've done that now. What else can I do? What else can I add? What healthy fats can I add in? What? How can I make sure? I mean, I don't know about yourself, Danielle, but I'm a huge fan of collagen peptides or bone broth supplements. Like, I'll add in extra collagen or bone broth powder into anything, like meals, coffees, anything I'm eating or drinking, just to make sure that at this age, I'm in my 40s. I really want to make sure my body's still getting available, easily accessible amino acids for building everything from hair, skin, nails, neurotransmitters. You know, we need amino acids for everything. And so, and it's an area that's really well researched, the ability for our bodies to use those amino acids for the building blocks. And we know that as we age, we just don't break protein down as effectively, so we need more protein. And so that adds to that picture of helping to build muscle, helping to keep our scaffold strong in the body, the connective tissues, the collagen. So it's really about finding these easy, simple wins that women can gain without having to make radical changes, but make simple changes. Stop eating at 6 o'clock. It's a simple thing, but it's effective, because then you have this really nice window leading up to bedtime throughout the night and the next morning, where you're gaining 14 to 16 hours of nothing going into your system. And your body's like, right, well, I'm gonna start axing some of this handy little storage of fat I have in my liver or around my organs. And you start to become an effective fat burner.
Absolutely, that's such great advice. Stop eating at 6 o'clock. I see so many people with really good intentions and they say, I'm gonna start fasting, and they skip breakfast and they eat, you know, late at night. So they'll eat, let's say at, you know, 1 p.m. and then it's 7 p.m. and you're eating a big meal right before bed. Our bodies are supposed to be detoxifying during sleep. We are going to be interfering with our sleep if we're eating too close to bed. And it's, if you think about it, your digestive system is not built to be really eating so much in the evening. We want to think about eating when the sun is up. And I know that right now, currently in the Northern Hemisphere, it's summer. We're having these really long days. I mean, I'm going to sleep so much later because the sun is just setting so late. I'm like, it's setting at almost 9 o'clock. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm not even ready for bed yet because the sun isn't even down. Yeah. But we want to make sure that we're eating with enough space before bedtime so we can fully digest our meal. And because also our insulin sensitivity is not going to be as good at night. Absolutely. So if one of the worst times to eat is like right in front of the TV at night. You're doing this mindless eating, snacking, eating these higher carb foods, and your blood sugar is just going up and the insulin's like, I was ready for bed. So you can see it on a continuous glucose monitor. If you wear those, if you start eating at night, if I eat at night, I'll just turn it to me. If I eat something at night and it's higher in carbs, my blood sugar goes higher than ever. In the day, we're going to be using that as fuel. But if we eat it, it's just going to go right to storage. And, you know, a lot of people struggle with, they just feel hungry at night. And usually I tell them, and I'm sure you might find this too, is that if you are hungry at night, you probably didn't have enough protein during the day. And you were talking so much about protein's importance. And I know that initially, when we're trying to become keto adapted, we have to lower our protein a lot to maybe get into ketosis because it does have an impact on our blood sugar. But I want to remind people that as soon as you can, you raise that protein right back up, because we don't want to be limiting our body with protein. It's the most satiating macronutrient. We need it to build muscles. We need it to build hormones and neurotransmitters and enzymes and all the things. And we need it to help our hormones and help us as we age. So don't be limiting that protein.
Yes.
All the advice you gave is just top notch. So good.
I love that you said that as well, Danielle, because there are two ways of achieving ketosis. And, you know, there's the ketogenic diet and then there's low carb. And there's a lot of crossover, and I'm sure you agree with this. It, you know, you can achieve ketosis through having low carb, more protein and healthy fats. And some people go more heavy on the fats, and it's very dependent on the individual. I find that women, particularly in their 40s and 50s, don't do so well on the really heavy fats. They do better on higher protein and healthy fats in moderate amounts. But again, it does depend on if they have a lot of weight to lose or insulin resistance and various other factors. But it's as you said, having those heavy meals or even snacking after 6 o'clock. And the other thing to note with that as well is we train our bodies to produce something called ghrelin, which is our hunger hormone, at very predictable times. So if we eat at, say, 8 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and then start snacking at eight, our body will produce ghrelin spikes at those times in anticipation for that regular 8 p.m. snack in front of the TV. You're probably not even hungry, but your body is anticipating, well, I'm going to be getting my snack soon. So boom, there comes that ghrelin. And it takes a bit of time to shift that ghrelin spike. And you almost have to just ignore that hunger at 8 p.m. because it's not a true hunger. It's just your body's been trained into that hunger spike. So I say to people, either just go clean your teeth or have a selection of herbal teas in the evening to kind of try and distract yourself, go for a walk. But after a week or so, it does get easier. But the first week, 2 weeks, it's a bit more challenging because you're like, why am I so hungry? I can't ignore this. And it's there's a real calling for the fridge. And I would also say get rid of all temptation. Just don't have it in the house, because if it's there and those ghrelin spikes are spiking, you want the chips, you want the candy, you want it all. But if it's not in the house, and once that's passed, you're like, actually, and I say to myself, the ketones are coming. And you know, within half an hour, you're like, actually it's past now and I'm not even hungry anymore. And so it's all good, but it takes a bit of understanding that hunger is temporary, it's not true hunger, and get comfortable with it too.
I love that. I love that you said that. I agree with the advice of getting these things out of the house. If you live with other people, it's not as easy to, you know, get rid of all your kids' snacks or your, you know, your partners. So what I do recommend for that is that you make a special space for your foods. And it's like, this is your only cabinet, or you have some sort of opaque containers that you put in the refrigerator, because, you know, the fridge and the freezer are a shared space. So you can't see those temptations, because every time you see a snack, you have to make a decision to have it or not have it. And so throughout the day, that's like taking a deposit out of your bank of willpower. So if every time you open the fridge, you have to see those treats, you have to make that decision, and it gets harder and harder and harder to say no. So if you can, you know, put them in a container where you can't physically see them, that's super helpful. And I love what you're saying about the ghrelin spikes. And the same thing happens when you're doing fasting. So if you've ever done a more prolonged fast, what I originally thought, and what I think a lot of people think about fasting, is that I could never do it because I would just keep getting hungrier and hungrier. But that doesn't actually happen, because it's driven by hormones. So you get waves of hunger where it will peak and then it will subside. And it's really, really just kind of empowering to experience watching yourself get that false hunger, like, oh, it's just the ghrelin, it's just because I'm used to eating at eight, but I want to make this change for myself. So it's that mindset piece, like you've decided this, you're going to put this new boundary, this is what you're going to do, right? And so you're going to watch this hunger start spiking, and you're going to be like, oh, there's the ghrelin. My mind's telling me, wow, this is what it feels like. And normally I just listen to this. Mm-hmm. And now you can watch it. You could see what happens. And you could see that you'll probably have an impulse and an impulse and an impulse, like, oh, get up now. Oh, you should get something. And then these foods will start flashing in your head. And then you'll do what you recommended. I always say, hey, brush your teeth, go for a walk. Having things like sauerkraut or pickle juice, like the juice from these fermented foods, can also turn off those cravings. L-glutamine is great for sugar cravings. Distract yourself, go read a book, go, you know, pet your cats, like be with your loved ones. So there's so many things we can do besides eat that I think it's really about people making up their mind, like, oh, I really don't need this, and I don't want to continue this habit, and realizing that they have control. And I think that is so empowering for so many people to experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think sugar addiction, it's such a fascinating subject. I really, I attended a sugar or food addiction conference recently. And because I feel like a lot of people get stuck in this place of being addicted to the foods that they desperately want to give up, but it's that they're stuck in this metabolic mess and it's they can't see their way out. But actually, once you start venturing out, it becomes like you lose the grips of that food addiction, just break away, because your physiology changes so radically, your taste buds change so radically, your cravings change, and it's very liberating, and it's life-changing. And I think if there's anyone listening who thinks, I could never give up sugar, or I desperately want to, but I keep falling off and I keep finding myself back in the same place, don't fight it, because it's one of those things that we have to almost take day by day and step by step, and just say, today, this evening, I'm choosing to not have that, whatever it is. Just today, let me see how I feel tomorrow. And then the next day comes and you say that same thing. Today, I'm choosing to not have that tonight. If I want it tomorrow, let's see how tomorrow. Because often when you're thinking of giving up something that you have come so reliant on, it's the long-term giving up that freaks people out so much. It's like, oh my God, I'm never having this again. But doing it on a day-by-day basis is much more manageable. And then every day you're kind of building this solid foundation of stepping away from it. And then as you start to feel better and you feel more energized and you have more energy and motivation and less dependence on that food, it becomes a much, much easier decision to make. But at the beginning, it can feel very challenging for people. And that's where you just need to say to yourself, just today, all I need today is, all I'm saying to myself is not today. Just not, I'm not having that today. And that helps to start, that gets you on the journey. It really gets you on the pathway in the right direction.
It really does. And I love that idea of that. That was helpful to me. I always felt like I tended to more of the camp of the abstainer rather than the moderator, because I'd have one bite and then it would be the whole thing. And so that's so many people. So having that knowledge of like, am I an abstainer or am I a moderator? Do I try to keep moderating this? And that's why, like, we don't ask people who are addicted to drugs and alcohol to moderate, but we ask people who are addicted to sugar and food to moderate. And obviously a lot of people are not able to do that. And so, you know, the other day, my wife got some ice cream and she's like, do you want some, do you want a bite? I'm like, nope, zero is easier than one. So having no bites is so much easier than having one bite. You have that one bite, you get the your brain lighting up like a pinball machine. And then you're just thinking about it. I was liberated. I was like, I don't even, not even thinking about it. It was like, as if she said, like, do you want a bite of this, you know, phone charger? Like, it's no, like, it's nothing's not happening in my body. And so when you have that boundary and you're taking it really slowly, I'm not having this right now. I can have it, but I'm choosing not to. It's a lot of these mindset tricks that are really helpful. Of course, I don't specialize in, you know, eating disorders and sugar addiction, but these are just some things that have helped me. And I can tell have helped you and your clients as well, that it's like, we don't have to think about forever. Let's just think about right now. And let's make this into a choice, you know, and like, no one's telling us we can't have it, because a lot of times if you say you can't have that, then it's like, well, I want it just because you told me I can't have it. But you can have these things. But I think deep down, you don't want it. And so if you say, like, I don't want to have this right now, even though my body might tell me, my brain might be telling me that I do, I don't want this. And so I'm going to choose not to have this because I have free will. That feels more empowering than someone saying you can't have that. And then you feel sorry for yourself. I've been there. I've been on that side. You know, everyone's getting ice cream. I'm sitting there like, meh. You know, we all feel sorry for ourselves when we're on this journey a little bit, but we don't stay there. And we feel liberated by our choices, because our choices are liberating us from that crushing tie to eating every few hours and these cravings and everything. And it's really what liberates us in the end. And it becomes an easier choice as you start to feel better. And then you go and you have something, and you know, you have fish and chips, you have fries, you have whatever, and you feel disgusting. You're like, wow, I really don't want to feel like that anymore. So being on this journey by itself can help us feel really good about our choices as well.
Absolutely. And I think, Danielle, you mentioned there how people feel often this disgusting feeling after eating these foods. And shame is one of the most powerful emotions that a lot of people feel after they've eaten the foods they know they don't want to, they're desperately trying to stay away from. And it's a crushing, soul-sucking emotion that just pulls you further and further down. And I think that's really one thing that people need to realize is food addiction is one of the hardest addictions, because smoking, drugs, alcohol, it's quite easy to, once you've given up those things and you've managed to overcome your addiction, you're not constantly having to decide about which alcohol and how much alcohol to have. Food, you do. You have to eat. So it's this addiction that you have to control and constantly decide, okay, I know I have an issue with food and I've had an addiction to it. Now I have to try and monitor it and manage it in a world that is telling me to eat all the time and tempting me with smells and visuals and sells
and all
sell.
The advertisements everywhere. Like, you have to walk through this. We tell someone who's struggling with alcohol, well, don't go into a bar. They don't really have to see that much of alcohol, right? Or drugs. But there's food advertisements for these foods that we're trying to get off of.
Yes.
Everywhere. We're just bombarded.
You're constantly having to make that decision. You're in a restaurant, bread baskets come to the table. You're in a restaurant, there's a dessert menu. You're in a convenience store, there's candy bars and chocolates all right next to the checkout. It's a constant decision-making battle in the head. So I think it's so important that people recognize that our world is set up, our food environment is set up against us, and we have to really take control of our physiology in order to manage it, to get through this world and still, as you say, not be repelled and disgusted by these foods now, because we feel so great eating those incredible, healthful, nutrient-dense foods that are fueling us and making us feel amazing. But there's that gap. There's where a lot of people are and where we want to get to. And then there's transitioning over to that place, and it can be a rocky road for some people, but please, if you're listening and that's you, there is a great deal of hope and it can absolutely be done, and do not beat yourself up about it. It's a step-by-step process.
Yeah, I love that. I totally agree with everything you said. And when you talked about the shame that accompanies eating a food off plan, what I tell my students to do in my blood sugar mastery program is we look at this as information, right? So you eat a food that you didn't want to eat, that was off plan, that maybe was high sugar, didn't make you feel good. Let's take the shame out of it and let's look objectively if we can, you know, easier said than done. But it's like, what happened? I had my stomach hurt. I was bloated. I felt tired. I felt cranky. I yelled at my kids. I started craving food the next day. I didn't get a good sleep, blah, blah, blah. So then we start looking at, let's put this, you know, photo of the McFlurry or whatever it is. And then let's write all the symptoms down underneath it and say, so every time we want to get a McFlurry, the McFlurry comes with these symptoms. So it's like, do I want to choose that? And so as we sort of have this journey of like falling off the wagon or eating things off plan, it can really be encouraging to have those experiences, even though we're not looking for perfection. We want to learn through experience of like, And as humans, we're trying to see what we can get away with. Let's be honest, right? Because we don't want to not be able to have any indulgences or any, you know, fun foods at a party, you know, but it's like, I know that if I were to eat XYZ, I would have all these symptoms. And so sometimes I might choose that. And most of the time I'm not going to choose that. So then you get in this place where you're choosing what you want instead of just being pulled toward it and forgetting it. So a lot of times we very quickly as humans, this is all of us, we forget how badly we felt. So I'll be like, I'm not eating those keto treats because they hurt my stomach. The next day I'm eating a keto treat and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's hurting my stomach again. Like, how many times I'm like, okay, this hurts you. Every time you do it, you don't eat these anymore. They're off the table. So now I'm not eating them, you know, like, but it takes time. Like even the best of us, you know, even us, I'm sure yes. maybe you have your own stories like this where we eat the same thing and we're like, what am I doing to myself?
Yeah, yeah.
But keeping track of that can really, really help.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, we're humans. We're doing our best to juggle yeah. in quite an artificial world. We manage a lot, particularly us ladies with, you know, managing a lot. A lot of the women I work with are super women trying to just keep going with all these plates spinning. So I think it's so important that we give ourselves a break and we really recognize that we're doing our best. And that is, you know, one of the strong messages I give across in all the work I do is just really fall in love with taking care of yourself, whatever form that looks like, you know, just thinking about, right, what's the best option for me, my body, my emotions, my mental health right now. And, you know, that sometimes involves making tough decisions, but it's, you know, we have to be the gatekeeper for ourselves. And, you know, let's get good at gatekeeping what's best for us.
I love it. Well, this has been such a fantastic conversation. I feel like we're so aligned and I love that you're teaching me more things about, you know, what's to come in the cycle of my hormones. And I'm, you know, I'm going to have to learn this stuff better because it's something that I'm going to come into and I want to be able to support my clients better. So tell us a little bit more about where people can find you. I know you have a great store in the UK. I know you have books. So, I'll link all this in the show notes.
Thank you. I'm the founder of a high street and online store called So and Arrow, which is entirely gluten-free. And we specialize in low carb and healthy keto products as well as supplements. I run a Facebook group called Healthy Keto and Low Carb Community. And I have, on my website, I share blogs regularly. I'm also starting in September a course. It's an 8-week course called Better Balance. And this is really where, you know, if someone needs a bit more support, a bit more intense support. So, you know, daily lives in my Facebook. I'll be doing Zoom sessions for those who join the course for more structured learning, but also those live sessions that are a bit more fly on the wall where you can really see what someone does on a daily basis. I love to share those tips and habits that are easy to adopt. And I'm on Instagram regularly doing storing every day, various things. So, and that's at Pauline J. Cox. I'm sure you'll share that handle as well with your show notes.
Yes, thank you so much. And what are your books?
So Primal Living in a Modern World is my first book. That's available on Sonara's website. My second book hasn't come out yet. It's due out early next year. Awesome. And yes, we haven't released the title yet.
Ooh, okay.
I won't say anything when my publisher.
That's okay. That's okay. We don't want anyone to kill you, and we'll wait for it patiently. But I'm really excited to dive into your books. And if you're in, you said the store was in Bristol in the UK.
Yes, so
if
you're, Bristol, UK. Thank you.
If you're around, there it is. If you're perfect.
Yes, so, Bristol in the southwest. So we are quite unique in that we are on the high street, but we get a great deal of visitors from all over the country. We bake all our cakes, quiches, Scotch eggs, sausage rolls, everything in store, and it's all grain-free, gluten-free, and low-carb. So it's kind of a dream shop for me that I wanted to open years ago, and it happened. So,
well, I'm going to have to make my way to the UK. I when I was 13, I decided I wanted to be Baby Spice. And so I failed at that. But I also really wanted a British accent, which also not happening. But I might go to the UK because I have such a love for, you know, for all of my British clients and the culture over there and the history and the music. And now So and Arrow is going to be on my list. So we'll have to come hang out.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, I love it. So thank you so much for being here, for sharing your wisdom and giving us more hope in that we can really take more control of our bodies, and our body's not rebelling on us. We just need to listen to it and learn what it needs. So thanks again for being here.
You're welcome, Danielle. So lovely to be a guest on your show. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Unlock the Sugar Shackles podcast. I hope you got tons of value and so much information from this show, from this episode, and from our guest, Pauline. Thank you to Pauline for coming on the show, and thank you to our sponsor, Good Idea. Remember, you can get Good Idea at goodidea.us and use the code DANNYHEALTH to save 10% off your order. These are the best tricks for bringing to holiday gatherings or any sort of social gatherings because they help you to lower the blood sugar response from your meals. They're socially appropriate, they're delicious, and they are also a great alternative to alcohol if you are trying to be really good and healthy this holiday season. All right, everyone, thank you again for listening. I will see you next week for another episode.